Big news! The sale of the season is here. It's Wayfair's Black Friday sale, and it's on now. Right now, get up to 80% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. And with amazing doorbuster deals from November 27th through December 2nd, you can shop the things you love at even lower prices at Wayfair. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home. And the best part? Free delivery just in time for the holidays. This Black Friday, Wayfair deals are bigger and better than ever. There's no place like home for the holidays. And no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. So don't wait. Black Friday ends soon. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now and save up to 80% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here! Right now, get up to 80% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, seasonal decor, and way more. All at Wayfair. These are Wayfair's best deals of the year. From seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, enjoy fast and free shipping with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 80% off during Wayfair's Black Friday sale. Now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey guys, it's your favorite sisters with the Confessions of a Reluctant Caregiver show on UK Health Radio. On the show, you'll hear caregivers confessing the good, the bad, and the completely unexpected. You're guaranteed to relate, be inspired, leave with helpful tips and resources, and of course, laugh. Now, let's jump right in to today's guest confession. Hey Jay.
Hey Nat.
Hey Jay.
Guess what?
We're right beside each other.
I know, I'm scared.
So our listeners can't tell.
No.
That we're in the same room.
I know, because we're big time now.
Well, I mean, we're big time in our own heads.
That's true. But we are actually, this is the first time we've ever recorded together.
In a studio. Because we've actually recorded a lot of episodes together, in case you haven't noticed.
Together, like side by side. Like
Stop talking.
I'm touching you. So you got to sing the song?
Just the two of us. We can make it if we try. Just the two of us.
Guess what?
What?
We have a guest.
Oh, a podcast. Jacob's like, I don't know what these sisters are doing.
They have got to move on.
I'm going to tell you right now, guys. This is still Confessions of a Reluctant Caregiver, but we are in studio and we are going to be going in studio long term. We want to thank our friends at PBS for having us.
Absolutely.
So, but let's talk about the reason we're here.
We've got another great confession today.
Oh my God, it's so good. I'm ready.
I am going to tell you guys all about it.
It's a boy too.
Oh, it's a boy.
It's a boy.
Shh. It's a boy.
Yeah.
It's so rare. They're like almost extinct. But okay.
Tell us about
Jacob. Get serious.
Jacob's awesome.
It's my turn to talk.
Okay.
Get serious. Okay. So today we're going to welcome to the podcast. We've got Dr. Jacob Kendall, who truly has an incredible story, and he also brings to us a wealth of knowledge, which Natalie and I can always use. Jacob's life took an unexpected turn when he became a full-time caregiver after his father suffered a stroke and a heart attack, and that was just 1 month after his wedding. Drawing from his own experience as a caregiver and his unique background, which you guys are going to hear all about, his insights are practical and they are deeply personal. Jacob, you have a four-dimensional way that you do caregiving that you're going to share with us today to help us master challenges that are with empathy and understanding. Again, that is probably something that I can use for sure.
I think we can all use it. Empathy is so important, and understanding is even better.
It is.
Kindness is clarity. Clarity is kindness. That was backwards. Sorry about that.
You get that straight. Jacob, thank you so much for being here with us today.
First guest. Jacob, you're our first person in a studio together. We're all together now. So Jacob, we're happy to have you.
Yeah, thanks, JJ and Natalie, I know we're going to have a great conversation.
I didn't make sure Jacob was still there.
I know.
He was like, I don't know about these sisters.
It was the singing. So, Jacob, we always start, Natalie usually starts, I'm going to jump right in. She says, you were born. So, and then you tell us what happens next. So, Tell us a little bit about your, like, where it all started. Like, you were born, you've got this family. Tell us your background.
Yeah, so I was born in, I grew up in Pelham, Alabama. It's just south of Birmingham. Mm-hmm. And my hometown is relevant for my caregiving story because I went back there for a little bit after my dad had a stroke. I grew up there, and then I've lived in several different states as I've gone through grad school, and then I was a professor at a couple different schools in the Midwest and then in Georgia. And now I'm a small business owner and intermittent caregiver.
Oh, we can relate to that. Okay, so you're going to have to tell us a little bit more about your background. So you grew up in Alabama. I have some real good people that I like in Alabama. And any siblings? What was life like? Lots of family? Paint a little bit more of a picture for me.
Yeah. My brother is 9 years older than me. Mm-hmm. He and I are very, very close. And I personally think that siblings that are farther apart in years have a tendency to be closer. I hope that my own children are going to be an exception. And we have a son who's turning two in October, and then he's expecting a sister in December. So I hope that they'll be close in spite of the fact they'll be close in age. And so he and I grew up being very, very close. We're still close to this day. Mm-hmm. And we were close with our parents. My dad ended up dying a few months after his stroke. But I know we'll get to that later. And my mom also has complex medical needs. And so he and I have tried to split duties over the years for the various things we've helped our parents with. Most of that time, we have not lived in the same place. We are actually living in the same town now for the past 3 years, but for over a decade, we did not live in the same place. Mostly because of me. I'm the one to blame for that.
Oh, well, at least you can acknowledge that. You know, it's funny. I like that you said that you think you're closer because you're farther apart. I think that's pretty cool. Because, I mean, JJ is clearly older. I know you can tell that, yeah. Jacob. And
I could not tell.
Thank yeah, you, Jacob. Jacob's
been married a long time.
You will receive your gift shortly. So, and then we also have a younger sister, but we're all 2 years apart.
So yeah,
there is, okay. And we are very close. So you're okay with
it. But you can totally argue when you're closer.
Yeah.
But I will say this. But let me ask you this. So he's 9 years older. At some point, he left the roost, right? Or did he stay in the community and you all continued? And was it you that left, moved out of town? Because, I mean, you would have been you, your mom, your dad, and you if your brother moved out when he turned 18, kind of idea.
He did move out, but he was never far away. He never lived in another state. I've lived in New Orleans, Indiana, Georgia, and I've also done a lot of traveling around the world.
Yeah.
And so I spent a much larger amount of time being much farther away geographically. So, yeah, that's what I meant earlier when I said I'm the one to blame.
Oh, that's funny. So you go to college and you meet your wife at some point. And then, but when does care kind of enter into your life? So kind of walk us through how life is going for you.
Well, my mom has complex medical needs. She has the same heart condition. I got my heart condition from her. It's congenital aortic stenosis. She and I have each had our aortic valves replaced twice. So I've had two open heart surgeries.
Hey, Jacob, can I ask how old you are? Because nobody can see how old you are.
It's young.
I'm 38. I'm 38.
Wow. So two surgeries. So because this is why people got to watch on YouTube.
Yeah.
Because then you can actually see the guests. And they'll be like, oh my God, he's young.
Very young.
When did you have your first surgery?
2014 and my second one in 2019.
I'm having to do math.
Like, yeah, that's 10 years ago, he was 28.
Okay, thank you for
about
that.
28, Jacobs.
And so, when your mom had to have it, and when you had to have it, who took care of you? Who took care of each other?
Yeah. So, let's see. She has with both of those conditions, Crohn's disease and heart disease, has gone in and out over the years of needing care. Our family is very accustomed to spending time in hospitals. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting with my first heart surgery, I had it in the middle of my PhD program and I had to take the least amount of time that Tulane would give me off was 6 months. And I didn't need all that time to recover, but I was just hanging out at home, with my mom during that time. She was already retired because of health concerns. And it's interesting because she provided most of my care during that. And this is before I was married, during that time. And then I got a lot better. And then she experienced a major episode with her Crohn's disease.
Right.
And I started to care for her a lot during that time. We joked that we was like the blind leading the blind. But that's often how it is with caregiving these days, you know? So that was kind of the first major experience with it. And then she has, you know, my dad was mainly there for her to care for her. And she's had times when she's been really okay. I mean, I've been to Europe with her twice, including once since that time. And then it would be harder for her to travel right now.
Right.
And so the main thing that I do right now is, you know, I'll go to appointments with her. And my brother's family currently lives with them. And so he and I try to, you know, split those responsibilities up. Mm-hmm. When it came to my dad, that happened in 2021.
Okay.
And he had the stroke a month after I got married. So I've been married for 3 years now. Mm-hmm. And I'll give a spoiler because I know we're going to get more into this. I have a feeling you're going to go back to something in my more distant past. But my wife and I, we both met. We were both working at Mercer University. She was staff. I was faculty. And we had plans and everything, a house and everything in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And then he got sick and we had to completely change those plans. So I know we'll get to that eventually, but that's kind of filling in the different times that I've done caregiving. And I would say what I typically say now, when it was with my dad, it was full time and it involved a whole lot of things. Right now it's not full time, it's more intermittent. And I see caregiving as a continuum. It's not are you a caregiver or not, it's where are you on the caregiving spectrum. And it goes back and forth. It's never, you know, it's rarely ever steady. So okay, I'll pause there because I'm sure you'll want to go back and
So you and your mom, I think your family, it sounds like you've already been attuned to having to care for one another, because you said that you're used to being in hospitals. Does everybody in the family kind of have their job, their care job, would you say? Like, dad did this, mom was leaned into this, depending on who was sick.
I would say more so it's not the particular task. It's, oh, well, I did this last time, it's your turn. And a common example is,
I like that.
My dad's dad is actually still living. Mm-hmm. He's 96. And I don't know if we're going to get to how much of a challenging situation that's been and how frustrating it's been for us. Because when my dad got sick, we asked him to move down here with us. We used to be closer when we moved in the Birmingham area, but now we're living in South Alabama. It's several hours away. Mm-hmm. And when my dad was living, up until, you know, he had his stroke, he was going up there every other week, just a couple hours away to see his dad. And so now my mom still wants to go visit him. He just refuses to leave his home. But she cannot, it is not a good idea for her to drive on her own. And so my brother and I kind of split back and forth, like, hey, you went last time, I'm going to go this time kind of thing. So it's more so like that when it comes to those things. But I will also say, you know, you mentioned that we have a lot of experience. You mentioned that I had said that. Let's see, as of, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, I don't remember it exactly when he was diagnosed. My brother has three kids, and the youngest one has DMD, Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And that is a huge priority in time commitment for them.
Yep.
And my brother and I have had conversations like, what is this going to look like moving forward? Because they are going to have to provide care for him. Yeah. And it's getting more and more so. And they're not going to be able to do that both with my mom and their younger son. So these are regular conversations that my brother and I have to have these days. And it's not just providing the care. It's like my mom doesn't need to live by herself again. They can barely all fit into her house now. But my wife and I, when we're in a place where we can move to another house, we need a larger place because our family's growing and she and I both work from home. And whenever we go to an open house or whatever, we got to, like, could my mom stay here with us reasonably? Like, these are the kinds of things that we have to go ahead and be thinking about. And my brother and I, like I said, we're regularly having conversations.
You know, I think that's so good. I totally interrupted you, but now we're in the same room. We can slap each other, Jacob, as opposed to just look at each other like, I can't believe you interrupt me like that. I heard multi-generational homes, and we've had guests in the past talk about how homes really need to be built to be able to support multi-generational, instead of what they call single family homes,
right?
We do need multi-generational homes because the care need is going to be so great, especially over the next 10 years. You know, we recently went to a conference where they talked about that we need 1 million direct care workers that are paid to support individuals who need care. And I'm going to tell you right now, we already don't have them.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking we're going to need a million by 2030. That was what at a most recent conference I went to.
And I'm surprised the number's not higher.
Yeah. Friend, I think it probably is higher. But I think they're relying so much on unpaid caregivers. There's 53 million of us, which I think we know it's probably closer to 75 or 80 because that was from a 2020 study from our friends at the NAC and AARP. But I think realistically, the fact that you and your brother are having those conversations, like you sound like us. Like JJ and I were like, okay, what are we doing for the podcast? Hey, mom just got back from the hospital yesterday.
Yeah.
Like it's totally like, and what are we going to do about this?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Absolutely. So I have a question because it sounds like you're more of a Southern person.
I do like
that. Maybe small town. I don't know, Jacob. So you talk about your mom though. And is there ever a conversation about, hey, maybe mom would do well in assisted living? Or is that a conversation that's entirely off the table?
That's true.
Entirely off the table.
Well, she's not to that point now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she probably has a very similar outlook as most people in her generation. And I use generation here, acknowledging that concept is fraught with problem. But I still think that generally applies that, you know, and understandably, people want to die in their own homes. People want to be in their
That's
own
right.
homes. Totally get it. So do I. So I would say we haven't had too many conversations. She has talked about how, you know, when she moved down here, my dad came with her and he was bedridden or needed a wheelchair. And so they needed enough space and whatnot. But he died like 2 weeks after they moved down here. And the house is too, once my brother and his family are not there, the house is too large for her. And so she's like, should I just go into an apartment? And we're familiar with a few kinds of examples where it's, I would probably say on the spectrum of independent to total nursing care, it's not quite assisted living. There's like these, you know, retirement mm-hmm. communities, yep. you're in your
exactly.
own home, but it's, I can see that possibly being something, but she doesn't want to live alone at all. She would much prefer to live with one of us. So we haven't really gone too far down that path, but she also is not to the point of needing assisted living. She just, it's in a place where we would feel much less anxious if she simply were not living alone. But she does the vast majority of things herself. She still goes and does social things. She goes to church. She's in a widow's group and all those things. Yeah. So she's very active.
Very active.
I like that. She's like Bird. After our grandfather died, we call our grandmother Bird on my mom's side.
Yep.
And Bird was very active. And my grandfather died in his when they were in their 60s. And she lived to be 82. And she, I mean, went to church, worked at the hardware because our grandparents owned a hardware store. And went, you know, but as she got older, as she aged, it was very much, I probably shouldn't drive into Knoxville. You know what I mean? Like we're from outside Knoxville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
So shouldn't be driving on the interstate. And so I think it's, you know, it's hard, especially as our parents or our loved ones are aging or they have their ability to judge or their abilities change as it evolves.
Yeah.
And how do we have those conversations? I really love that your brother, you and your brother are having this conversation. I want to pause on this conversation because I need to take a quick break. This is so good. Jacob was thinking, he was like, we're going to talk about my dad at some point. And I'm like, yeah, but your mom is so great. Yeah. So we'll be right back. Give us 5 seconds. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here! Right now, score up to 80% off everything home. These are our best deals of the year. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Black Friday at BJ's Wholesale Club is so big, we called in the expert at paying less around the holidays.
Scrooge here. Past, present, or future, it's hard to beat the Black Friday deals at BJ's. Believe me, I've tried. Get 25% off select toys, 30% off select small appliances, and 45% off select TVs through December 1st. Plus, doorbuster deals Thanksgiving weekend. These prices are so good they even rattled old Marley's, Jane. Bah, humbug. Sorry, old habit.
Visit BJ's.com/Black Friday for holiday savings.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
All right, everybody, we are back here with Dr. Jacob Kendall. And I'm jumping out with a question because we've got Natalie.
Jump in.
Natalie is quiet. So here, Jacob, I am jumping back. So I want to talk about the crisis that changed everything, because now we're going to talk about you. You have the plan. You're married. You're moving to Winston-Salem, which is practically where I live, just so you'll know. You're moving to Winston-Salem, and you get, is it a phone call? Is it, what is that turning point? And what makes the decision that you go and you upend your entire life? What's that look like?
Yeah. So by the time that my wife and I got married in May, I was a professor, and I didn't have to do this, but I did the respectful thing and told my department a year ahead of time that I was leaving. And it was a long discussion because I was on the tenure track, a long discussion with my wife. I had already started a couple businesses. I had other business ideas in mind, and I had my second heart surgery, and that was a huge impact. I'm like, you know what? I've had this second surgery. I don't want to live the rest of my life doing this one job and definitely not getting paid nearly enough for it. We sold our house, and I had let my department know a year at a time so that they had had time to replace me. And so we already knew that we were doing that. We sold our house. We had a house ready to move into for no cost for a year in Winston-Salem. Yeah. And we were going to do that within a month or two of us getting married in May. And about a month later, I'm in Macon, Georgia, where we were living. And my mom calls and said, hey, something happened with your dad. He had a heart attack, and he was fine at that point. They discovered he had blockage, and they had to do bypass. I don't remember how many bypasses they were going to do. The man ate fried eggs and bacon every single day of his life for breakfast for 40 years.
I'm assuming he never drink whole milk as well. That also,
yes,
you would eat. And he would do that, Jacob.
Yeah.
He never had any issues. And we just always assumed my mom would be the first to go. She thought that she was going to be the first to go.
Yeah.
But life, you know, life doesn't really care about that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I get that call. And so my brother and his family were already living down here. Mm-hmm. We'd live across the bay from Mobile.
Yeah.
They had already been down here for a few years. He started a business down here. But we all went to Birmingham to be with him right before his surgery. And he came out of the surgery, but while he's recovering is when he had the stroke.
Wow.
And it definitely hit him really, really hard. They tried to clear it up through some kind of brain procedure.
Yeah.
And then I think he had another stroke at that point. And it was pretty clear that he was going to have to go through rehab and everything.
Yeah.
And my wife and I were like, okay, we're going to give it as long as we can before we decide not to move to Winston-Salem.
Yeah.
And we had a cutoff where we had to let them know. And, you know, we learned about stroke, and like, I think it's something like a month. If you don't start showing signs of recovery, then it's probably not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to have all the evidence that I could of that. And when it was pretty clear that that was not happening, we canceled our plans. It was really, really difficult. But my brother's family was already down here.
Yeah.
And I could not reasonably, I could not leave my mom to do it on her own. It would not have been a good situation. So my wife and I moved in with them. This is a couple months after we got married.
You gotta love that. Nothing says, hey, good times. Let's move in with us.
I know.
As a newlywed.
We didn't expect it to be permanent, of course, but we had already sold our house in Macon, and we moved in. And it was my hometown. It was a house I had lived in for several years. They were still there. And we are very fortunate that my wife had already landed a really good remote job.
Yeah.
And because I didn't get to work hardly at all during that whole time, because just to be honest, my parents had not land all the paperwork and documentation that they should have been. Mm-hmm. And so we had to quickly come together to get power of attorney, medical power of attorney, will, all that stuff. And we had to sell the house and buy a new one while my dad still was living. Because with his retirement, he was still working as a therapist when this happened, but he also had retired previously. And so with all of that, we had to take advantage of it and go ahead and do all those things. And I had to help my mom with all of that. I spent a lot of time at the hospital and rehab. Then he came home, and I'm the one who called care.com or whatever it was to have home health care folks come in.
Yeah.
And I'm the one who handled his transportation by ambulance a few hours down south where we moved here, and all these other things. My mom would not have been able to do that. And she also would not have been able to do the physical labor of it. And I, you know, this is what happens sometimes. Caregiving rarely ever has no effect on the other aspects of your life. And that's just what we had to do. I'm very thankful for my wife for being supportive of that.
Yeah.
And thankful that she had a good job. And we all now live here together. She and I got a separate house, and it's about 10 minutes away from my mom. And that's where we are now. And I think I mentioned earlier, my dad died 2 weeks after they moved it down here.
So I want to fill in some space in between. So,
sure, yeah.
So I heard you say, you know, your dad has a stroke after heart surgery, during, after, potentially a second one, and they're trying to repair it. He goes through rehab. You and your wife are living with your mom. How old are your parents at that point, if you don't mind?
My dad was 71, and my mom is 3 years younger than him.
Yeah. So. Tell me about family planning during that time.
Well, I'll answer it a little bit differently.
Sure.
I think that there are a few different variables that are relevant in how things were handled. I've already given you one.
Yeah.
My brother and I are very, very close, and we're excellent at getting through any kind of conflict that we have. And I have a lot of pride in that.
I think that's a boy thing, too. Yeah. I say that respectfully, Jacob. I think that's a boy thing, too.
Yeah, well, that's my second point is having a PhD in gerontology. That's the field that I know the most in, right?
Yeah.
And so I should be an expert in this. And so I was just straight up with my brother, like, listen, these kinds of situations often tear families apart. We need to both acknowledge that that's a possibility here. So let's put it on the table and realize, listen, this is a real thing that happens to a lot of people. Let's not be that way. And I mentioned to him that maybe it's a good thing that we're both males, because caregiving largely falls to females. And it's well, let's just take the positive out of this and do the best that we can with that. And then a third set of variables is, I'm used to the hospitals with my extended family as well. By this point, let's see, I had lost all but one of my grandparents, and he's still alive, like I said earlier. And I had already lost my mom's sister, also has heart disease, and various other folks. And when my mom's siblings were all still living, they were dealing with these issues with their father, who had dementia. And we also had helped my dad's dad deal with these issues with his wife, who also died from dementia in her early 90s. And so we had a decent amount of experience. We had my background in gerontology. We had the fact that we're just accustomed to having these conversations, and that we're really good with being honest and open with one another, at least when it comes to my brother and me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just decided, listen, all these have the potential for strength. Let's make sure we use these as strengths rather than weaknesses.
Man.
And my brother could not do a lot of the day-to-day things because he was down here. And once the dust had settled and we had moved everyone down here, he was basically just like, listen, I acknowledge that you had to change your plans. Thank you very much for doing that. My wife and I are grateful, and we're going to pick up some of the slack now. And I think that for the most part, it's gone okay.
Yeah. You know, that is so insightful. I think what you just said, because I keep, you know, good relationship, gerontologist, open communication, because I don't want our female friends to be like, Natalie, don't be sexist, but I'm going to tell you.
You know, but what I heard really was you called it for what it was. Jacob, it's an elephant in the room. This situation can tear a family apart. Let's not anybody sugarcoat it. You know, look, this is going to be a difficult situation. It's going to be hard, but let's get through it, and let's get through it with strength and not with, you know, destroying our family. And I think sometimes as females, most females, that we're like, we really want to fix it and make it soft. And I think if any of us can learn anything, yeah, we want everybody to be happy. That's my problem. I think if we can all address it, so many of us can learn. Look, it's hard. Say the fact that it is hard.
Or I'm mad through this. I'm mad about this, but I'm not mad at mom.
Yeah,
but I'm mad about this, or I'm not. I'm mad.
Yeah, it's a hard thing, and I think for you to be able to say that, and for anybody listening to say, recognize it for what it is, and then do your best to get through it. I think that's really insightful.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
I do want to comment on the sex and gender part of it here for a moment. First of all, I don't think that is a sexist statement to say these things because the data bear it out.
Yeah, thank you, Jacob. I would like to say that Jacob has his PhD in gerontology.
Yeah.
So we have a subject matter expert also in Jacob. So Jacob just put on his gerontologist hat.
Yes. Thank you, Jacob.
Thank you, Jacob. Keep going.
And I've also, you know, being a social worker, I've taught courses on it, and you know, social justice and health disparities are a central part of that line of work.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to be really honest here for a moment. First of all, I'm very blunt with my personality, and there are a lot of times I just had to say, listen, Mom, this is how it's going to be. Get over it. And she had this attitude of, I just have to do this. Like this, I just have to do this. And something I offer a lot of pushback when I speak to caregivers or about caregiving.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say a few different things when I talk to people about this. First of all, there's a reason they tell you on airplanes to put your oxygen mask on before you help anyone else do it. You are no good to whom you're caring for if you bury yourself in the ground in the process of doing it. And it's hard for people to hear that. And I think that there are two reasons why it's hard, and they are on opposite ends of the coin. And it seems counterintuitive what I'm about to say, but I believe that it's true. On the one hand, caregivers definitely acknowledge, like, wow, this is really, really difficult. They may not acknowledge it to someone else because something like 30 to 50% of caregivers at work don't tell their colleagues about it because out of embarrassment, but they will definitely tell themselves, this is really, really difficult.
Right.
On the other hand, I think that there's this sense, and I'm always a little bit hesitant to say this because I don't know if it's going to, you know, hit the wrong way, but no one's ever disagreed with me with this, so I'm going to keep saying it. There is this sense, and I think that it is stronger among women. It is a very centuries-old gendered thing. There's this sense of, this is my responsibility, and I'm going to wear the fact that I'm sacrificing myself on the altar of martyrdom as a badge of honor.
Mm.
And I think that that serves as an obstacle to getting more help and support and being willing to ask other people for that.
Mm.
And that is something that exists in our society. It probably exists in humanity overall.
Mm.
These are, and if I were to summarize all that I just said, it's with this. Caregiving is in no way, shape, or form at any time a simple matter. It's always multiple sets of variables. It is a complex dynamic. And if we're not willing to acknowledge that, then we're not going to be able to move forward in a good way. Okay, I'm going to get off my podium.
Hold on. Okay.
Jacob took us to church for a second.
He did.
And I'm not going to lie to you. We do have to take a break.
Okay.
Because this is good. And I'm going to tell you, I think it's an implicit, I don't think it's explicit. And when I say implicit, I think that what you're talking about, Jacob, and for that folks are like, what is she talking about? I think what Jacob was talking about, especially with the on the throne of martyrdom,
uh-huh.
I don't think some people realize they're doing it. And I think that
part of it
is they're doing it because of their past experiences to make up for something that is unresolved.
Guilt.
Yes.
Well, it's also gender norms. It's gender norms baked into us for centuries. This is an uphill battle.
Yes. Okay. Hold on. You're going to do a question, but I'm going to take one break.
We'll take a break.
5 seconds. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Gosh, Jacob, I love you.
You're
my best friend. Okay.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
All right, everybody, we're back here with Dr. Jacob Kendall. Okay, it's my turn to get asked another question.
You get one question.
That's it. That's my one question. You have got like this wealth. This is amazing knowledge. But I'm going to ask this because we have professionals that have come on before. So you're a gerontologist. That is your educational background. You're a caregiver. Years. Tell me, which do you feel like you've learned the most from? Like, where does your education from?
Well, I want to mention the third piece.
No.
The fact that I've had two open heart surgeries, right? I have lifelong experience in being a patient. And so I've learned a whole, just all of the hundreds of encounters I've had with various medical specialists.
Mm-hmm.
I have learned tips and tricks and strategies and hacks to squeeze more juice out of our medical care And now what I want to do is share that with other people, whether that's patients themselves or the caregivers who are taking those patients to their appointments and helping them comply with their medications, et cetera.
Yeah.
So I probably would have to say that all of that is mutually reinforcing, but I have been a patient for much longer than I've been an educated person. So I just can't deny the deep, deep impact of having these personal experiences. If I had to say anything, that's been my main classroom.
You're right. You're totally right, because lived experience, and Jacob, you know this is so important. It's the lived experiences that inform who we are and the decisions that we will make. And it's no different than individuals who have experienced trauma. It's your past experiences that make up who we are. You know, Jacob said something that was really saucy that I was like, I want to dive into that a little bit.
He said hack.
He said tips, tricks,
and hacks,
and squeeze. I'm like,
let's have it.
I'm like, go ahead, keep going.
Everybody's like, teach us.
Don't go away, girls. Jacob, give us tips, tricks, hacks, and squeezies.
I said tips, tricks, strategies, and hacks in order to squeeze more juice out of your.
I do like squeezy. Can we have squeezies though at some point?
Yeah. All right. That's my favorite part of the expression anyway. So to start this part of the conversation, I'll say this: that my mom and I, we both have heart disease, and we both have complex medical needs and have different providers, and so we're regularly telling one another about our appointments and, well, hey, I saw this doctor. This is what he said. This is what I, whatever. And there are many times where she is like, you said that to your doctor? And I'm like, you're damn right. I did.
Yeah.
We need to be more assertive, and we need to be better self-advocates for ourselves. And I think there's this notion, especially probably with older adults, especially, that what physicians say is biblical truth. And I'm like, no.
Preach.
No. Let's back up a little bit and reevaluate that statement. I've learned so much about medicine and my conditions and health from other sources. And I'm not demonizing medicine. It is an excellent tool. It has saved my life at least twice, but it is a tool, and there are other tools out there. I'm a member of a Facebook group for people who are also on warfarin who have had their valve replaced. And we all share our experiences with one another. And there are times when I learned something from that group, and then I told my doctor, like, hey, I heard this. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Or, oh, I'm not familiar with that. Or, oh, wow, we need to change your treatment plan because of this question that I wouldn't have even known if you hadn't asked me.
That's right.
Right? So those are some of the strategies that I give. Okay? On the soft skill side, you need to be more assertive. You need to have better self-advocacy for yourself because some of your providers are probably good, but others are just trying to shuttle you through like you're on a factory. Conveyor belt.
Yeah. Like Laverne and Shirley. You can tell how old we are.
Yeah.
And like you need to be prepared to ask those questions. And then there are these tips and tricks, the practical things that you can do. Like in the notes app on my iPhone, I have a note that's specifically for medical questions for my providers. And whenever I think of one, I write it down because I'm probably not going to see them again for a few months and I'm going to forget that question. And then I go in there and I have these questions written down, and then I ask them those questions and I type out their response to them. So I'm not going to forget it. And it also makes the appointment more efficient. Mm-hmm. And if I'm talking to caregivers, I'm like, are you going to the appointments with your parent or with whomever you're caring for? Because you should do that. Mm-hmm. And, I set an alarm every morning and every evening to make sure I take my meds. Okay. Simple things like this. I recently spoke to someone who, she's an older woman, and she wanted to know, like, hey, I just have a couple quick questions. And I'm not going to go into the details, but I told her two suggestions, and those two suggestions seem so obvious to me, but it just doesn't cross the minds of a lot of people because they're dealing with all kinds of stuff. And so most of the things that I could sit here and tell you are just really simple.
Yeah.
But we have so much clutter in our mind that they're, we don't bother to think of them. So hopefully that kind of answered your question. I only gave a couple of specifics, but those are the kinds of conversations that I have.
Mm. Mm. So I think that I'm glad we got to the squeezy. I think, let me ask you this, because I feel like Jacob's going to end up coming back. Because Jacob's mom, I'm interested in the second half. And then I'm interested in your grandfather, too, and how you're trying to navigate that. I mean, I think there's so much.
There's a
lot of stuff. It's like Paul Pistachnik is this week's guest. And he seems, you guys would be friends. I'm going to tell you, he took care of his mom, took care of his dad. Now he's got an aunt. I mean, we were like, he might be a three-timer. Yeah. Because it's like, and he's learned from every experience.
Yeah.
So how long was your dad home? Like, what as your dad transitioned, because there's a difference. When you're, think about the tasks that you're doing when your dad was in rehab. So I'm assuming he was in rehab, he was doing, getting, coming back together. That's a different type of caregiving responsibility versus when he moved back home. What was that like?
Well, I probably would have been okay with a family member not being in the facility with him in his room. I would have been more okay with it being less time than my mom wanted to be. But if she was going to go insist on staying there over the night, I'm like, you don't need to do that. I'm younger. I'll be the one to go stay there overnight. Yeah. Because I obviously wasn't going to get any sleep. And so it was a lot of back and forth, trading out with my mom to go sit with him. And I did not want my wife to be involved in all of that because she's the one who's employed. She's the one that has a job. Let's her just focus on that. So it was largely my mom and me doing that kind of thing. His friends regularly came to visit. Some people from our from their church regularly came to visit. So there was a lot of that. And then it was spending the day. Well, another thing is when we were there, we had to advocate sometimes on his behalf, especially in the nighttime shifts when they don't have as many people. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, I want to talk to the nurse. I want to know more. I want to know the details that are going on. When can we be here? When is the doctor going to be here? When can we have a medicine, a meeting with that person? There's always a social worker in the facility, and I have a social work degree, so I can kind of speak that language, right?
That's right.
And I wanted to them to tell us things that they wouldn't have told us if we didn't ask for them. And then while we were not there, you know, I was helping my mom with all the, we had multiple meetings with an attorney. We went up to visit my dad's dad a few different times, and just all these different things, planning it with a real estate agent to come look at their house, to sell it. And we tried to do a lot of these things before he came home because we knew that was going to take more of our time. Does that answer the question?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so you've got that. Okay, then your dad comes home. And then what happens?
My mom was very concerned about being able to afford the caregiving. Totally understandable that that's the case. That stuff will suck you dry financially and in every other way. But I told her, Mom, you cannot do this.
Yeah.
Her response was, but I have to. And I'm like, no, the first thing that you need to focus on is that you can't. Yeah. All right. And so I'm the one who hired all the different caregivers and kept in touch with them and whatnot. She didn't want to do any of that. And I think that if push came to shove, she would have done it. But she was very thankful to have me around to take care of those things.
Yeah.
And while he was home, we did not have them sit with him at night. We could not have them all there all the time. So we were still having to do things, turn him over to change him, yeah. And stuff like that. You know, you can't have everything.
Yeah.
I just wanted us to have as much as we possibly could. Plus, I had to take care of, since they did an open house with their house to sell it, the pool out back was really dirty. So I had to get someone to come clean that. I had to, you know, We had to clean out their garage. My dad, I mean, he was a pack rat, so it was a yard sale. That was a lot of work.
Trust me, we know that feeling.
Yeah, multiple trips to the thrift store to take everything that we didn't sell in the yard sale. And yeah. It's all these different things. And yeah, we obviously had less time to deal with that because he was at home, you know?
And then I'm going to ask, I can't believe we're right up against our time because we got to do sister questions. We've got like a handful of minutes, but because we're going to have you come back, Jacob. I've got so many more questions and now you're officially our brother.
Yeah.
So right. You never had sisters, so let your older brother know, hey, you got competition. But how was your marriage at that time? Because remember you were newly married and your wife's working and you're doing a bunch of stuff, you and your mom. Like, how did that, do you think, impacted your marriage?
In a positive way. And I'm fortunate that we had the foundation there to begin with. In like a three-year period, I had my second heart surgery, decided to leave my tenure-track job, started three businesses, got married, cared for my dad, lost my dad, moved twice, and had our first child. And at some point, my wife half-jokingly said, you know what? We should start a business where we help young couples and young professionals handle these kinds of situations that come up. And after a while, I was like, you know what? I don't think that should be a joke anymore.
Yeah, I love it.
there was a lot of, I'm very lucky to have her.
Yeah.
I love her. And wait, what's her name? Because we haven't even
it's
said
Emily.
Oh, it's Emily. Oh, my God. It's our
same
sister.
Same as our sister.
Okay, so we automatically love Emily. Let her know that, too. She's coming
so
into the
I.
family.
So I'll my sister question has to do with Emily.
Okay.
So Emily and Jacob. So tell me how everything has impacted your planning for the future, because you're going to have two kids, and you've what does your future look like because of your past? How's it impacted your planning?
Yeah. We already have life insurance policies. Mm-hmm. Americans are terrible at planning ahead.
Okay.
And she and I were like, we're not going to fall into this trap. We directly observed the effects that it has on a family when the fact that my dad did not plan a lot of this very well. We're like, we are not going to fall into that.
Mm-hmm.
And her parents have health issues as well. And so we're getting it from both sides, and we're like, we know we need to plan better for these things. We've already had conversations about what if something happens to us, who are we going to put in line to care for our children?
Yeah.
She is way better at saving money than I am. So that's a good thing. but yeah, it's mostly having these conversations.
Yeah.
I've experienced more death in my family than she has. I do feel like that's going to make me equipped when that starts happening with her, because I've just seen, you know, a good bit of it. And, you know, a lot of it boils down to the willingness to just put this on the table out in the open. Don't ignore it. I still know people who were in their 60s and 70s and 80s who absolutely refused to talk about their own eventual death. And I'm like, the more that we embrace our mortality, the higher quality and quantity of life that we have. That is a message that I want to drill into everyone. So, but whatever the reality is, or whatever the reality is one day going to be, put it on the table and be willing to have that conversation.
Yeah.
And we would be in a much better society.
You know what? Jacob is like, well, wise beyond his years.
I mean, he's just a baby.
He is a puppy. And he's going to have a baby in December.
I know.
But, okay, so I've got one more question. Because this is always the favorite question. It's always my question.
And Jacob hasn't talked about it at all.
I know. Jacob, what is your favorite guilty pleasure? What is the one thing that you do just for yourself?
I don't have as much time to these days because I have to read for other reasons. But I love nerding out on quantum mechanics and animal behavior, evolution, things like that.
That is the best that I have ever heard is...
Nerding out, I think, was the best part. But then whatever the books...
I'm not even sure I can spell quantum physics, but I like
it. I can get there.
I can get there. Yeah. You know what, Jacob? We love you. You are absolutely the best.
So much.
I am having you... We are having you come back.
Yeah.
And we might even say, bring your brother.
Yeah.
And
or
so...
Emily.
Oh, you can bring Emily, too.
Yeah, everybody.
I mean, let's have the whole family. And so... But you know what? I think it would be... I think, Jacob, we'd love to have you come back because I think you're a twofer.
Yeah.
I think that you've got so much more wisdom, and I think there's more things that you have to say that we need to hear.
Yeah.
And that I know we didn't get to. I want to hear more about your mom. I want to hear about your grandfather and how you're planning around that. And you know, even your brother, I think having your brother come back and talking about what it's like to have that pressure, because he's got care for his own family and feeling responsible to you because he loves you. He loves you as a brother, very clearly. Your family definitely, you know, no matter all the, we all have dysfunction, but you love each other and you're caring for one another. And yeah, we're having you come back.
Okay, well, he doesn't get a choice.
No, he has no free will.
Jacob, thank you so much.
You know what?
Yeah, sounds good. I enjoyed the chat. I look forward to seeing
you. All right, guys. Guys, thanks so much for listening to Confessions. And until we confess again, we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Well, friends, that's a wrap on this week's confession. Thank you so much for listening in on UK Health Radio. But before you go, please take a moment to leave us a review and tell your friends about the Confessions show. Don't forget, visit our website to sign up for our newsletter and connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Pinterest, and Twitter. You'll also find the video recording of all our episodes on the Confessions website and our YouTube channel. We'll see you next Tuesday when we come together to confess again. Till then, take care of you.